An early and vocal critic of the TSA looks at the current controversy. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome in to the Arrow News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Poole, who is the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find the website at reason.org, and Bob has two newsletters that he does on a regular basis. One is on air traffic, one is on airport security. Guess which one we're going to be talking about today. Bob, thanks for taking some time out to talk with our listeners on the eve of the holiday here.
Glad to be here, Paul.
Let me ask you the big general question that's on my mind. I will tell you that I have despaired a little bit at times over the past few years about watching our country slip down the tubes of security at the expense of personal liberty, which we all know where that leads, and thought that it could only end badly. I'm actually a little encouraged now to see people waking up. What about you?
I'm encouraged also. I think finally the TSA has pushed the public too far. And we are now going to get, I think there's a good chance of a serious political reaction, probably not during the lame duck session, but once we have the new House in place, I think a high priority is going to be to rein in the TSA in some meaningful way.
All right. Now, I watched a very brief debate, much to your chagrin, it was very brief, with Michael Boyd a couple days ago on CNBC, and Michael is a former airline executive. He has a consulting firm now that does work for airlines. And his position seems to be, like many people, where he is not acknowledging that the entire premise of what we're doing is not working. How do we get traction against these guys?
This is very difficult. I mean, I think the implicit premise of a lot of these people, including the TSA administrator, is that what we have to strive for is perfection. We can't take any risks. We need to have a system that they think can be made ironclad so that no terror attack ever succeeds. And I think that is just that's the wrong message to give to the American public. I mean, Al-Qaeda is now priding itself on having spent a few thousand dollars to achieve massive results, not in terms of a disaster, but in terms of the damage we're doing to ourselves, to our country, to our liberty, to the huge amounts of expense being put into ever more technology at airports and ever more staff on the TSA screening workforce, holding people up, costing tens of billions of dollars a year in people's wasted time, let alone insults to their dignity and privacy and so forth. So, I mean, it seems to me that trying to uphold the TSA's standard basically creates victories for Al-Qaeda.
Well, maybe in the short run, but at the same time, I hear people walking down the street now knowing what the Fourth Amendment is. That's never happened before.
That is very encouraging, and I think we are going to see, as I said, a political reaction based on that, and I think what I hope this leads to is that we re-examine the premise on which screening has been based since the TSA was created, namely that everyone must be treated as equally likely to be a bad guy. And as long as we do that, that's a recipe for endless spending. I mean, when we, and you can see the progression that's developed over the years. First, we had the shoe bomber, so therefore we all have to take off our shoes. Then we had the liquid bomber attempts, and therefore we have real controls on liquids that we can bring aboard. Then we have the underwear bomber, so now everybody's underwear has to be looked at. Well, the next logical step, and we know Al-Qaeda's already done this, is body cavity bombs. And so where do you go with that? If that's your approach, then you have to have mandatory body cavity inspection for everyone. This is lunacy.
Well,
this is not the way.
you also have to have the technology to do it without taking your clothes off. And I really am going to be interested
in
that.
Yeah, and then you have a case you're probably going to have, even if you do get technology to do that, there are going to be false positives. And if there's, you know, more than a, you know, one out of every million travelers that's a false positive, you're going to have some very embarrassing situations of people that are going to have to be taken aside for a manual search of the body cavities.
Well, another thing that was only previously talked about by airport security policy geeks has been the Israeli model, unquote.
Right.
And
right.
Now I hear a lot of people talking about it, looking at it. And I went online and researched this a couple days ago just to see if what I knew from the past to be true was still true. Mm-hmm. And it is. And that is that once you get through what the Israelis do and they put you on LL Airlines, they serve you a meal with metal forks and knives.
Well, I've had meals with metal forks and knives, too, and when I've been upgraded to business class on international flights. So that's not a strange experience. That's happening every day all over the world on planes these days. But no, let's get back to the Israeli model. I think, unfortunately, I mean, it works very well, and it is based in part on a kind of evidence-based profiling, but it's also extremely time-intensive and labor-intensive because, number one, they have a very high threat level, much higher than anything we have so far, at least, and they have a very small number of flights and passengers compared to a country like the United States. So I think trying to adopt, you know, trying to just copy the Israeli model would be extremely expensive and labor-intensive and very disruptive to the kind of air travel that we would like to have. And until and unless the threat level gets to something like it is for Israel, I don't think it would be warranted. But what I think we can learn from Israel is the evidence-based profiling, basically go to a risk-based system that looks to find bad people, not prohibited objects.
Okay, when we come back from the break, let me ask you about a couple of things going on politically right now. Bob Poole is my guest, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Arrow News.
Freedom through performance. At Sirius, performance is not simply the measurement of a single design parameter. Rather, it's a total package. It's optimum balance of speed, efficiency, comfort, safety, ease of flight, and quality. We call it Cirrus Flying 2.0. Aren't you ready to feel the freedom?
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Pipermatch.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation. Here on Opt-Out Day, we're talking about airline security and general airport security. And the frustration on both sides of this, I think, is becoming obvious. Bob, I have to note that Congressman Micah, who is notably one of the authors of the legislation that created the TSA,
right,
now shows signs of wanting to stuff the genie back in the bottle. However, he's taken the first step of telling airports all across the country that he would recommend they opt out of TSA and hire private security. And I guess the question I would have about that, is this just political scapegoatsmanship, if you want to call it that? I mean, because if I understand, the rules would be pretty much the same under private security as well.
The rules would be pretty much the same. And certainly Congressman Micah knows that because, you know, he was in the room negotiating, you know, what the narrow constraints of the opt-out program are. I mean, I certainly think it's a good idea to have a competition for the TSA, even within the very limited bounds that that offers. It can be more cost-effective. Because even though the private firms are required to pay the same wages and benefits and to use all the same equipment and all the same procedures, they can still, to some extent, be more flexible with full-time and part-time people that in ways that the TSA as a federal workforce can't, and therefore potentially save money and make the operation better match the amount of screeners on duty to the changing level of passenger loads, both within the day and from season to season. So I do support expanding encouraging more airports to dump the TSA and hire a screening counter. But it is not the solution to the problem of the groping and the body scan machines, because that would not change.
Okay, what chance do we have at Trusted Traveler?
Well, if you asked me 6 months ago, I would have said very, very small. I think that Micah and the other Republicans, the new wave of anti-big government, anti-Washington regulatory top-down state, I think may be persuadable that a real trusted traveler should be mandated by Congress. And Congress can do that. That's what Congress actually thought they were doing in the 2001 legislation. It calls for a trusted traveler program, and the model that was out there at the time being discussed in aviation circles was that people who passed the background check and got the biometric ID card would get expedited screening. It would be a security program, not just an identification program. And the TSA systematically refused to really do it that way. And the current TSA administrator seems to be holding to that position, although he just gave in on pilots. The next logical question, why not everybody with an existing federal government security clearance? I mean, if we could trust them with nuclear secrets and weapon secrets, why on earth can't we trust them to get on a plane without going through the third degree?
Well, I agree.
Okay. And then you build from that. And then you say, all right, well, let's make a security clearance program for frequent travelers. And do what you need to do, and people can choose to enroll or not if they think the benefits would be worth it. But I think this we could use the body scanning machines and the pat down procedures only for selectees for secondary screening, and we could take maybe 30 to 50% of the daily average travelers who are frequent business travelers. If they would enroll in a true trusted traveler program, I mean, they could be whisked through with very little in the way of the kind of rigmarole that exists now. They certainly wouldn't have to take out their laptops and take off their shoes and all that nonsense.
Okay, now you're describing a fairly big political step that an awful lot of people seem to be deeply entrenched in the notion that what we have now is effective and is working and we can't live without it. How do you get from where we are now to there?
Well, I think partly you restate the point over and over again that the slippery slope that we're on is going to just get worse and worse because you can't maintain the premise that everybody is equally likely to be a suspect and therefore equally likely to need the third degree in screening. Secondly, you could point out that the TSA itself already adopts the trusted traveler principle for airport workers. People that need access to the secure area of airports get a criminal history background check, and they get an ID card that's not even a biometric ID card, and then they can have access to the planes. I mean, it's not just a passenger that can put an explosive on a plane. It's an airport worker that has access to the plane on the tarmac.
Well, and at this point, I think actually the easier way in is as a worker, as any number of TV news exposés have demonstrated across the country that sometimes the back door is a lot less guarded than the front door.
Right, and so if the TSA says that's acceptable, that's an acceptable risk in the name of practicality, but letting passengers have the same kind of pass a background check and you don't have to go through all the rigmarole, that's completely inconsistent on security grounds. And so I think if we can make that point and get a few articulate champions in Congress, and that could be Micah, although he's not on the Homeland Security Committee, but it could be Dan Lundgren from California, who is, this could go somewhere.
Bob, one of the expressed intents of Opt Out Day, these guys at WeWon'tFly.com, is to put pressure on the airlines to get on the side of the consumer on this. And I have to look at both the ATA and Airports Council International North America. Mm-hmm. Greg Principato on his blog essentially throws up his hands and says, well, what else could we do? What kind of conversation would we be having if one bomb got through?
Yeah, I'm very disappointed in that, because at the ACI's annual conference that I spoke at on this subject about a month and a half ago, the consensus in the room seemed to be that big change of this sort was needed, and that the current screening process is a real detriment to air travel, airports and airlines both. And I think it's a sad commentary on trade associations that are embedded in the Washington D.C. culture that neither ATA nor ACI has been willing to speak out and call for a change in this policy.
Well, and David Castlevetter recently told the press that ATA is in contact sometimes multiple times per day with the TSA on these issues.
Yeah, they're obviously certainly talking about these things, and maybe quietly behind the scenes they're arguing for changes in policy, but it would help an awful lot. It would create more backbones in Congress if they would speak out publicly.
Yeah, the opt-out guys, one of the things they say is, you know, okay, if the premise is we're giving up our rights when we pass this checkpoint, that'll be part of my decision and I won't fly.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, at the margin, that won't make lots of people not fly ever, but it certainly will cut the number of trips. That will very definitely hurt airports and airlines.
And in an industry right now that's hanging on by a few percent,
yes.
A margin's important. All right, let me close with the one point with which I think we could both maybe agree with Michael Boyd on CNBC Monday, and mm-hmm. that is that there is a problem in any federal bureaucracy when you have political appointees heading them. I was very excited when John Pistole was nominated because 26 years in the FBI, you'd think would equip the guy with an appreciation for intel-based security.
Yes.
What I didn't count on was that it also, you know, he's also spent 26 years trying to find ways around the Fourth Amendment, and that appears to be the side that's come out.
That does, and that's very dismaying to me. And I can only hope that either that he will allow himself to be educated on this and to see the inconsistency of their own policy, you know, between passengers and airport workers, or will find that if a mandate of this kind is passed by Congress, that he, you know, feels uncomfortable with it and takes himself out and gets replaced by somebody who's willing to implement such a program.
I wonder, looking at the nomination process that preceded him, whether anybody who is not a political appointee could weather the storm for long enough to get anything done.
That's a very good question, and I unfortunately don't have an answer to that.
It was rhetorical, Bob.
Right.
I anxiously await seeing what kind of news comes out of opt-out day, because I think it might be, if nothing else, an anecdotal gauge of how much the American public is starting to understand the issues involved. And I look forward to looking at whatever you write next on this topic, Bob, because I want to see where this all goes.
I'm not letting it go, and so I'm sure we'll talk again, Paul.
Bob Poole is the founder and director of transportation policy of the Reason Foundation. Find more info on both of Bob's newsletters and links to subscribe at no cost at reason.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.